Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 18 Summer Show. We are your hosts, Jim
and Jamie Shields. We're here to help you bring family back.
In the last decade, we've helped thousands of families create the family life that you have always wanted.
We give you simple solutions on how you can ignite your family life and succeed in both business and at home.
And please remember, time is of the essence. You only have 18 summers to truly connect with your children.
So let us help you make the most of it.
All right. Well, welcome, 18 Summers community. We are back with Candid Conversations with Jill Wesley. And Jill was brought to us because of being a big figure, I think, in teacher and educator in the speaking world, which you know that we're in. And she has a company called Science and Soul of Speaking. And Jill, welcome. Thank you for joining us again today.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, well, and it's good. And there's been a lot of, we're going to get into it today, a lot of changes in the speaking world through the pandemic. But one thing I feel has not changed, and that's why we love seeing your message and getting to talk to you before, hearing about some things you're doing in your own family, which our group will love. The ability to stand up and share your message or get a point across is absolutely pinnacle at all ages. And I think the sooner we get our kids to be able to learn this incredible skill set and put it around something they're passionate about, it's almost an unfair advantage.
Absolutely. It'll serve them their entire lives.
And tell us, what is Science and Soul of Speaking? Just so our group has a little, you know, more context. of a context of what it is.
Yeah, sure. The Science and Soul of Speaking is the business I run. I've been in the industry doing speaker coaching for almost 30 years, and it's a balance. A lot of people assume that in order to take a stage or be in front of a room, that you need to be the best of the best or have the most experience. And my work is really about empowering people to use their voice for things that matter to them. So a lot of times you'll hear people say that speaking is an art and a science, and that never resonated for me, because I always thought, well, how do people connect to the art part? Because that feels like it's a gift, and it's actually something that anybody can get better at speaking. So the science and soul is, the science piece is the actual message construction. You know, I have a degree in this and I've taught at universities. So there is neuroscience and psychology and message construction from a communication standpoint. That's the science piece. Like, how do you actually communicate your message? But the soul piece, for me, it means you get to be yourself and you don't have to be on stage and show up like many other people if it's not your style. And when people can tap into what makes them unique, their identity or their culture or their talents or what their own story, and they show up fully present and connected with the audience, that's what really moves people. And that's how messages actually get passed on, is when people connect with what the speaker's saying and they can relate and remember, and then they repeat it.
Interesting. I love that two piece, because I think there's little frameworks that people can get, but if they don't tie into the true science and, as you said, the soul side, it'll come across. The audience reads things. I mean, you've been on stage plenty, we've both been on stage, and you can feel, like, if you ask me to speak on neurophysics, we're in trouble. I don't know about it. And even if you gave me that framework, right, we're going to waste the audience time. But if we go on family life or something, or bring our story of family life into it,
absolutely.
I'm not going to say you're unstoppable, but again, I really feel it gives an unfair advantage to share and to add value.
It sure does. And bringing your soul helps you also stay away from the challenge that some speakers have, where they're giving such a generic message that we can't connect to it. So the joke I always say to clients is, if your message is, if you can believe in yourself, you can do anything, everybody's heard that 5 billion times. What is it about your journey or your family's journey or someone you helped that you can share to really ground it and make it real? So there's emotional resonance and we can really connect to it.
Yeah. And I wish, Jill, that I had met you 10 years ago. I wish, you know, and here's why. People said to Jamie and I, you're going to do talks about family at business events. That's insane. No one will do it. It's going to waste the time. And said, this is where we can add value. This is our genius. And entrepreneurs are begging for it. And it was literally a, an experiment where people said, well, fine, we'll let you give a family talk at a business event. That's going to, it's going to turn people off. They're going to walk out. It was the opposite. It was just enough pounding out of something, but I didn't have someone like you saying, this is your soul. This is a piece of it. This is going to give you more power than the science probably. So it's something we really strive to teach our kids. And, you know, our whole community, our 18 Summers community, is about how do we support our family life better. So I would love to hear, like, your take, and maybe even share a little bit with your own daughter, which we were fascinated with. You know, is it too soon to get them involved? It doesn't make sense to get your kids this skill set. You know, and if so, like, how can they, like, the way that you're doing it with your daughter?
Sure. Definitely. Speaking is a skill set that we'll serve all of our children throughout their entire lives. It is a portable skill, and we are more and more dependent on technology for survival, for our workplaces, for our schools these days. But the human connection and being able to speak for what you believe in and use your voice is the connective tissue. It's the thing that does serve us as a society, as workplaces, as families. So yes, with my own daughter, who's just, she sparkles on the inside and out. She's just a true joy. If we hear just random singing in the background from downstairs, that's just who she is.
We will applaud. No worries.
It's right.
She's screaming.
Deer screaming. That's our.
Oh yeah.
That's our joyful toddlers.
That's right. Oh, I saw the photos. They're adorable. And by the way, I love that part of the humanity of this virtual period we're in, is we're seeing our real lives instead of completely compartmentalizing like we have for so long.
Yeah.
So in terms of using our voices with our kids, what I encourage every parent to do is to let kids challenge different thought processes or different perspectives and ask kids important questions. I mean, developing critical thinking skills is really important for children and adults. And so asking kids, what do you care about the most? If you came and you could just tell one story, what would it be about? What do you see? Children are very connected to the concept of fairness and helping, and talking to them about, well, what's something, a cause, or what's something that you really care about that you would love to help in some way? If you had a magic wand and you could help people, what would you do? And that helps you get a sense of where they're connected. So my daughter loves, she's going to fifth grade and she loves art. And every summer we pick a project, and we're in this pandemic, and we are truly one of the fortunate families that we're in a situation where it's inconvenient, but we're not in danger financially or health-wise. And so part of my organizing values as a mom is those of us who have, yes, I've worked hard, but it's also luck. I mean, it's when and how you're born. Like, three of my grandparents didn't go to high school. So I'm seriously the first person in my family to be doing exactly what I want to do for a living.
Wow.
And I feel like that there's responsibility that comes with that. So we pick a project every summer, and it's a project that she can do, that she owns, that she can help others. And she picked putting together creativity kits for the children of essential workers, because art gives her solace. When she's sad, she creates art. When she's happy, she creates art. When she's bored, she creates art. So she thought, wow, if the kids could have a little something that was just theirs, and when they're worried or when they're sad, they could express themselves. I know it helps me, and I know I can help kids. So putting together that project, and then she had to pitch it, because
how does she communicate that in this?
Absolutely. So I mean, my day job is working with senior leaders and executives who are in corporate, and I work with successful startup founders. So I'm actually often coaching people on demo days or big pitches for huge startups. So I wasn't going to overload her with all of that, but it was basically, what is the problem? How can you help? And how can we do this together? And that's basically the little outline. Like, what do you care about? What's the problem you see? what can you do as an individual, and how can we do this together? So it's basically the individual, because she needs to model to other kids her goal. What we're doing is she's going to be kind of, we'll create a little pitch video, and then her little community, the Girl Scouts, and every kid, like the kids can you do little chores and get extra money to buy a kit. The kits are $10, and I'll match whatever, you know. I had to pre-order them, so I had to pay for everything up front. And then she's the one that's gonna, you know, assemble, and we'll do the drop-offs.
I love this. So you started with the simplicity of saying, what do you really care about? I mean, that's what I heard. I mean, what a straightforward, you know, enlightening question for them to really get creative on. She went right to art.
And then, but then too, bringing it down a notch, what you said earlier was, if you were gonna tell a story, what would your story be about? So you think, you know, a fifth grader, you could say, what do you care about? You know, our three-year-old might would say poop, you know,
and, yeah.
but if you say, what would you tell a story about? Then they might go into a little more of what they actually do care about. And so
they do.
I love that you've managed to enlighten us both on how maybe to speak to a little bit older one about starting project, and a younger one as to seeing, you know, where you maybe step in and encourage that process.
It's so important, because if I may really quick, kids aren't too, there's a tendency, I understand, parents want to shield our kids from seeing difficult things or being challenged, etc. But, you know, I have a reality-based household, and so I purposely chose a school that does project-based learning, that is really, really diverse socioeconomically, religiously, because life skills are very important to me. I lived overseas for a long time, and traveling is a big passion of mine. And I wanted her to have this skill set to be able to interact with all kinds of kids. Yeah. And so they started project-based learning in kindergarten. So the kids picked a project. They had to put together a budget. They also had a school garden that they did, a little farmer's market. So it's a good thing for kids to do even when they're little.
Yeah, for Absolutely. Sure. Go ahead. I know you have a comment on this. Our Montessori Waldorf queen.
Yeah, Montessori is
lit up right there.
When Waldorf.
Well, and how do you then take them from, or, you know, take your clients? Really, I know that you work with grown-ups, but it's all relatable. We're just big children.
We are.
So how do you encourage, once somebody knows, gosh, this is something that I really care about, it's something that I feel like I need to share, whether it's a grown up or a child.
Yeah, good.
How do you transition into, like, here's how you can use that voice? And like you said, you use that word impact, like, not just to use it and say, you know, like so many are doing nowadays, maybe sharing in one direction, not sharing necessarily the heart or sharing with an open mind, but sharing in a way that may even be off-putting because it's not encouraging the learning or encouraging the discussion. So the fact that you use that word with impact is huge. So how do you encourage to use the voice with impact?
Using the voice with impact is the cornerstone of the work I do. So we do a few things. One is we reverse engineer a talk based on what someone really wants to achieve. So when we talk about impact, the impact isn't whether or not I get a standing ovation or people love the talk in the moment. It's what happens when we're done and they go back home and there's tension in their family, or there's a big stressor at work. Have I equipped somebody and activated them in a way where we can look at behavioral change? So I'm not in the entertainment business. I'm really in the impact business. So we start, and I'm not an easy coach. I mean, I did some research with about 50, 60 of my clients. And the first thing that came up, everyone's like, she's tough. And what that is I'm not going to let them off the hook. So there's an element of courage that we need as adults when we decide to get up in front of people and speak. And my job is to create the container that is safe, where people can explore. Like, if you couldn't get in trouble, what would you really say? Because it matters and you're passionate about it, and not in trouble, but if, like, you could really be unleashed.
That's a good framing, I think.
Yeah, and speak from the heart.
Yeah, trouble can even, for me, I get great anxiety and feel in trouble.
In trouble, yes, internally.
If I speak up on something on social media, or if I say something that I thought mattered, but then someone like maybe took it wrong, and then I'm like, oh, am I in trouble? Because now people think it's bad, you know?
That's it. And the word courage has many layers to it. So it is the courage to speak with conviction and tap back into the values we have and what's important to us. It's also having courage to develop the muscle to deal with discomfort with feedback. And so there, it can be hard.
That's a big one. How would you say there's a courage point for, I think everyone has that fifth grade level to them, whether they're kids or adults still, you know, what are those first two little steps? You know, what would you suggest to someone getting on stage for the first time and being afraid of negative feedback? Because that could be the thin barrier stopping them. So what would you encourage them to do?
And that's why there's two of us, because I'm like, I'll show up, but I'm not reading it if it doesn't say nice things.
Yeah.
It'll be in trouble. I can't be wrong. I can't be, you know, so it's
right.
Usually I'm like, okay, you do that. I'll sit over here and visit.
You'll sit over.
I'll turn.
However, you are a leading teacher, and there's a feedback loop with teaching, and you can see, you can put together a lesson plan, or you could plan something and see that it's not resonating with children, and you're able to make those real-time adjustments. Speaking is similar. So I would challenge you in a friendly way that actually within you, you have the elements of that muscle already. And actually kids can be more challenging than adults in some ways. So I it's in you for sure. But in terms of someone who's just starting out and they have that fear, the worry about the negative feedback or how they're going to be received, it's about judgment. And we're concerned, you know, it's the ancient part of our brain that we feel exposed and really vulnerable, and we fear being ostracized or being humiliated. So in front of a room. So a couple of things I do with my clients. One is I actually have them do what I call the what if exercise, where it's cognitive behavioral therapy basically, but they're basically writing down all the things that they think could go wrong. And then I say, oh, you have, that's just a short list. I've been speaking for years. I got electrocuted on stage. I fell off the stage. Like, there's more that could go wrong, but I'm playful with it. But it's actually getting things out of your head and noticing that in reality, there's just four things to worry about. We have to manage our mindset, manage our content, manage the delivery, and manage the audience, how we engage with them. So it's being able to get those fears down and the concerns and putting together a plan to prepare and then a plan to recover if we mess up. The second thing is I always remind my clients that speaking's about service. And so when we feel really nervous, if we remind ourselves to reframe it as I'm here to serve this audience, and this is all about me putting something out there that I truly believe could help, that also releases some of that kind of performance anxiety or that concern about feedback.
Sure. Takes the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned that too, where I've said, I used to, where Jamie says, well, he's so tough and he can do, but I was not bulletproof, you know, 10 years ago, a decade ago, but you build up the muscles. And one of the best things is exactly like you said, take it off of you and put it on the audience.
Absolutely.
That's why you're really doing it anyways, right? The same thing with teaching your children. Like, does this matter so much? You know, do you feel so strongly about this that it doesn't, you know, that it's about everybody else? Like, you feel so strongly that this needs to be heard.
That's right.
And it's time to share it.
That's right. And it's about progress versus perfection. So feedback does matter. I'm not the type of person, there are people out there that's like, don't listen to haters or people that, there are some people that are just toxic. There's 5%. It doesn't matter what you do. But there can be valuable feedback. There are times years ago, you know, and I'm not speaking on stages right this second. I did a keynote yesterday virtually, but there's times where you get feedback and it's just around a blind spot. Like, oh, wow, I didn't give enough time for the group to go in depth in this work, this exercise. or they wanted to hear a little bit more of X. So there's the feedback's important because keynotes in particular, I see as living things.
Yeah.
It's not a keynote until you're experiencing it with a group of people. Prior to that, it's a piece that you've written that you've delivered in isolation. So if we frame it as, oh, we're doing this together and the feedback is something that will strengthen things, then we can relax a little bit more into it.
Now, with your clients and with, you know, now again, gearing it towards our families with children, how would you had some great questions igniting this thought process of what to speak on. Do you have some of those that you ask your clients about that feedback loop? Like, oh, so what did you feel went right? Or where do you feel you could improve? Do you have a couple of specific things that maybe we could utilize with our children when they experience something to help them hone in on what parts felt good or what parts maybe they felt they could improve on?
Sure. So some standard questions that I ask clients are, I'll start out with, how did it go? Which is very general, because then the feedback they give me is going to tell me which direction to take my questions. Mm. And I don't want to go into, I'm very analytical. I don't want to go right into analytical mode because I want them to be able to express whatever they're feeling in that moment. There are times where people think, I don't know, I think it went okay, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because it had that weird out of body experience, but then it turns out it went great, but they, I let them just speak to whatever that general sense is they have immediately. Then after that, I always start with strengths. So what went well? What was your favorite part of the talk?
Yeah.
And I always talk about connection. Were you able to witness kind of a connection moment with anyone in the room? Mm. Because I always want to remember I do audience focused coaching. So the content we create is what's best for the audience, not just here's what I want to say. And then I will require them to continue to tell me things that went well. So they'll say, oh, this went well. And then they want to slide into something negative. And so I ask what went well 5 times.
That's
train them to look for what's working.
That's great.
I wish I had that 10 years ago. When I first started speaking, Jill, I was like, get me the constructive feedback. What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And the problem that I found.
You just wanted to improve.
I wanted to improve. Yeah. The problem is you can't, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jill, what I found is I couldn't improve one of my best talks by just focusing on the things that need to be fixed. Okay. I had to focus on what went well and do more of that.
More.
Go deeper into that thing that really went well. That's what got the speech even better than focusing on the things that I had to
100%
fix, right?
And I will eventually go into, and I use the word upgrade. If you were to do an upgrade versus what went wrong, because I think of it in terms of degrees, but I'm with you 100%. Especially with adults, if someone is up in front of a room speaking and they have some experience, it's people are listening because this person has had a journey of sorts, they have results, et cetera. And if I'm constantly having someone, it's not how you coach an athlete either. I work with pro athletes. You don't just keep listing all the things that they may not do well naturally. You lean into the fact that, wow, this athlete has a great swing. Let's make sure and lean into this, or this particular athlete can do something well. It's the same with your kids. And it's the same with, when I'm watching, I may be coaching like a CEO or a senior leader and I'm at the event watching him, let's say they're usually men on stage, and it's like a 60-year-old man. When I'm in the audience, I feel exactly like I do watching my kid in a talent show. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm sitting there biting my lip. I'm kind of mouthing the words from the back because I usually know his talk by heart. Yeah. But I can't help it. It's just, I'm so with, it's a hard thing to do, but for a lot of us, it's joyous. And you both know when you're in front of a room and you're speaking to people and you see that light bulb go on, or they come up to you afterwards and you know they are not going to go back home and do things the way they used to. There's going to be a degree of change. There's nothing better.
No, it's a huge reward. Huge reward. It is. It's, and I think, like you said, when you're serving, you take yourself out, you it's not an ego thing. It's a contribution thing. You're like, gosh, I really just contributed something that no one else could have right now and made that difference. And there's some quiet satisfaction to that.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. And an occasional high five. I'm sure the two of you. You're a great team.
Yeah, thank you.
Important to tell our children, you know, what you just said too, like what, you know, just that importance of what you're saying, what is coming out of your mouth is a contribution. You know, I mean, the way that you just said that, you know, of the way that Jill coached you into saying that.
Good work, Jill.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jill.
But just, you know, really making certain that they know what you have to say doesn't just matter to you. Like, it may matter to someone else. It may matter to thousands of someone else's.
It does. They do.
Yeah. And
we have a little sign on our refrigerator, but it says your words matter. And that has multiple meanings. It's like the words you choose can be kind or unkind. Like, you're allowed to have whatever feelings you're having, but think about the words you use. But it also means you have the right to speak up and speak out, and your words do matter. And you can be a child and still share. I mean, you know, kids drop all kinds of wisdom where you're like, dang.
Our daughter has his number for sure.
She does.
Truth all day long.
I'll tell you, part of my keynotes go to her. I'll give examples where she had this one thing where the two littles were watch the movie Kung Fu Panda.
Easy for you to say.
It gets done, they get excited, and they're with their older brothers, and she just, and she by accident kicks her little brother.
Like,
and she's like, oh, they'll be fine, or I'm like, and I yell, like, what are you doing? And I felt terrible. Like, I really yelled at her because I was scared that she hurt, and I take her on my lap, and I say, you know, Maggie, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have yelled. I was just worried you hurt Sammy. And she looked at me, and I mean, we still use our talk. She said, Daddy, don't worry. We're all still learning. And I was like, oh my gosh, did she just say that? And so it's become almost a family theme. Like, if we can take that more, like, instead of you should have known better, you knew better, it's, hey, we're all still learning. And it's become like a family mantra that we use now with tons of families. That came from our 5-year-old. She was 4. So listening to those words, like you said, can be such an important feedback loop, like you said, that parents shut off.
And the fact that you did, which historically most parents didn't do, which I've learned to do, is to apologize when I don't get it right and do the repair.
Yeah.
And that's the biggie, is that she sat in your lap. She wasn't feeling like, I don't want to be around him. You know, she was ready to be open to repair and hear you out. You were vulnerable and honest, and you showed that you were still, I mean, it's beautiful. I love hearing that.
Yeah, so we always say, what's the saying around that we talk about? I'm trying to remember. Gosh, we have so many. There was something
That
just sparked me, but I'm going blank. It was something that
that's
just
usually
said.
What I do. I'm like, what were you talking about?
No, it was something around, I don't know. I guess I'm in awe of the feedback loop.
It is important that we offer those things to our children, that we're able to connect, you know, even with our audience. I think I've had moments of, you know, getting to the end of something and be like, meant to tell you this part. It's okay.
Sure.
We're human, you know, and encouraging our children to see, we're not perfect. Like, even though Dad's on stage all the time, like, he still doesn't always get his message, you know?
Oh, of course not. We're human.
One part comes before the other. And so it is important that they see us.
Stumble.
Yeah.
Well, but that's where the humanity is. I don't believe that everything should be totally canned and that we're getting on the stage doing the exact same thing. It's a different audience. There's different news stories. How do we keep things fresh? And human beings in the modern era, because of technology, they've seen so much video of just real moments. That's what they want. So it happens all the time. I'm on stage or I'm speaking and I advance a slide and I think, I forgot to tell them that thing. I can't go to this slide because I forgot. And so I'll say, hold up a minute. I'm going to back up a few slides. Let me go back and make sure I lay this out for you, because this is going to help you in a few minutes. You're the host. So people do this. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, no,
you're the one worked up, not them. And if you ask at the end, they're like, What happened?
What?
Yeah, it went back too slightly. I don't even remember that.
A conversational delivery is the best type of delivery. So even if you're someone that tends to be kind of reflective and you process a bit before you say things, that's great. Actually, the majority of the population is that way. So it won't register. A pause that you take from the front of the room always feels three times longer for the speaker than it actually is for the audience. So it just looks like you're being reflective and that you're being intentional about what you're saying.
I actually find those pauses actually
draw
the audience more.
Yeah,
you know, and that it gives them a chance for them to catch up, for them to settle in, for them to get on the same page. But that's it, as you said, there's definitely a science within that to learn that. And I tell my kids, look, I remember the first talk I gave like 20 something years ago at a corporate thing that I had to stand up, like I was like beet red. And
oh yeah,
it's going to change. But you know, there's a growth pattern, and accept that growth pattern and have fun.
Yeah. And nerves don't mean that it won't go well. Yeah. And I don't get nervous in general, but sometimes it sneaks up on me. And the great thing, I generally work with obviously people in business, but I do work with pro athletes. They get nervous before their games, and that's their actual job, but they have trained themselves to separate nerves from, oh my gosh, everything's going to be terrible. They work with the nerves. And so if we self-punish, a lot of people, when they feel the nerves, they're internally, they're like, oh man, I do. And there's this negative self-talk, and I'm all about radical self-acceptance, that this is what your body's doing. It thinks it's protecting you. It feels like there's a saber-toothed tiger, even though there isn't. And this is your body doing what it's designed to do. So getting mad at it never makes it better. And no, just never. Notice it and work with it.
Love it.
So good. There have been so many good nuggets in here from questions we can...
She has a page of notes.
I know,
right here,
I always Jill, do. So. I meant to tell you that if you see me not paying attention, I actually am. I'm just writing.
Oh, you're not doing Sudoku or...
I'm Facebooking right now.
Yeah.
I added you though. It's all good.
Oh, good. Good.
Just kidding. No, but so I appreciate, you know, being able to take what you're teaching adults in your professional life and bring it into our home and into our children and in time where it's so important to share our voice. So thank you for those tactics, for those questions. And then I must highlight a couple of incredible things. Radical self-acceptance. I love that. Just hearing those words, and your words matter. Like, I feel like you, the empowering, obviously you're good at what you do, because these types of empowerment words that aren't offensive or saying, say what you mean and mean, you know, like it's, mm-hmm. So I appreciate that we'll be able to take that. And our favorite question that we always ask, even though I feel like I've already learned so much from you, what would your 75-year-old self give to the Jill of today or to the world of today? So
what advice
many years down the road. What is that?
What advice? Right now in this tumultuous, difficult, challenging time, I know the advice I'd be giving myself is that it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. I have a default setting when there's uncertainty, that I have a tendency to be like, gotta push, you know? And
yeah.
It would be to carve out time, remember to carve out extra time to just be, and not have a to-do list above my head, floating above my head, and do work even more to be, I'm gonna reframe that, not work more, to be present, and I don't have to have it all figured out. That it's just about adjusting the sails versus trying. I can't fight the wind, but I can adjust the sails.
So powerful. Oh, adjust the sails. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Which is perfect. Thank you.
Love it.
Will you tell us where we can find you and tell us about your program that you have coming up, your virtual event?
Sure. Thanks. My website is Science Soul Speaking, because my company is the Science and Soul Speaking. So three words, sciencesoulspeaking.com. And I run a signature keynote accelerator. So I work with senior leaders, pro athletes. I work with entrepreneurs who are established in their careers. And they're at this unique pivot point, meaning they've had this journey and now it's really about thought leadership and what do I represent? And they want to refine their messaging because they're ready to give the talk of their life. So I do, it's a fabulous program. I work with a small cohort of leaders and we'll be kicking another one off in August. I do about 4 per year and it's done virtually and it's a supportive network. There's a lot of laughs, but a lot of wisdom and we challenge each other. And the outcome is getting a foundation piece of content that you'll be able to use for an interview, for the media, if you're doing a keynote, if you're a panelist. So it's an asset that you can use for visibility, for business development and networking.
Love it.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing with us.
ScienceSoulSpeaking.com. We highly recommend you guys check Jill out. Jill, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you. Like, we have notes galore. And
oh, it's my honor too. Thank you.
Going through them. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, we appreciate it.